We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another brand new episode of The Roundtable, where we discuss the latest Game Night's episode, all of the very interesting questions and things that came up during the game, what you commented on below. And this time we have a special guest. Of course, it's the player on the show. It's Ashlyn Rose here to join us. Hello, Ashlyn.
Hello. Good to see everyone.
And unfortunately, Cassius can't be here, but we're going to get his perspective through digital means, like we did last time with our last guests.
Yeah, Cassius will be coming in with clips answering a lot of these questions, so he'll definitely be present. And that's good, because this was a controversial episode in some respects.
A lot of stuff happened.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Before we get into it, a few quick caveats. Our goal is to answer the most asked questions, most commented on moments that we receive on YouTube, on Twitter, Facebook, regarding the episodes. If you would like to have your comment shown on air during one of the roundtables, the best way to do that is to watch and then comment within the first 24 hours, because that's when we're pulling the comments and then doing the roundtable. If you're much longer after 24 hours, we still love you for you to comment, but we've already shot the roundtable, so it's hard to then use your comment.
Yeah, if you don't want to comment, just find a comment you agree with and thumbs it up.
There you go.
That's another way. Obviously, we're talking about the Game Night's episode, and we're going to be discussing everything from it, including who won. So spoiler. If you haven't seen it, well, click through and go watch it. If YouTube's smart, it's going to be somewhere over here, I think, or here. It's going to be on the side of your screen.
It's going to be somewhere. Yes.
We cannot.
It's a spoiler show. We can't talk about it without spoiling it, right?
Yep. And the final caveat that we always have, you are not dumb. We are not calling you dumb. If we comment, take your comment, and we show something in the episode. In fact, a lot of the times, Josh has said this great, when someone comments about something and it happens a lot, it's actually kind of incumbent on the team editing it to see, oh, this wasn't conveyed clearly enough, or this wasn't clear enough in terms of what happened here. So your comments, thank you for making them. Please continue to make them. We'll always be looking at them from that light.
Yeah, definitely. We are not calling anyone dumb or stupid for asking questions. In fact, there are many times where we just straight up make a few mistakes within the episode as well. So it's just fun to discuss that and have a nice, I don't know, postmortem. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
All right, let's start with a question for Cassius, because he's not here, so we figure he should jump in first. There was a lot of comments about Cassius' hair.
Yeah.
I didn't really think about this, but he literally has changed it every single time he's been on the show, and he's been on the show a lot.
This was his quarantine cut, because it was looking pretty wild.
It was pretty long.
Gorgeous locks.
Yeah. So I just wanted to know, like, how does he choose his hairstyles? Why does he change it? So let's ask him about his hair.
I'm not really sure. I think it just happens. I choose to change my hairstyle just based on how I feel. My son is growing out his hair currently right now, so I'm just kind of riding along with that and growing my hair out with little man. So nothing in particular.
Well, he looks good. So that's,
yeah.
I mean, when you work out like 24 hours a day, every single day, you're going to look good, I suppose.
Yeah. Ashlyn, are you jealous of his locks?
I'm very jealous. Okay. Like I have a little bit of a wave here, but it's like a hot, messy frizz. I want the golden locks.
Indeed.
I'm jealous of his shoulders.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. I'm jealous of that time twister.
We'll get to that soon.
You win. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right. Let's start off with some general questions for the entire gang here. The question we always ask is, why did you choose the commander that you did to build your deck around? So, Ashlyn, do you want to start first? You played Karavek the Merciless.
Yeah, when I was looking through everything, I chose Karavek because I wanted to challenge myself a little bit. Usually I play a lot of big creatures and have a lot of creatures on the board, and I wanted to try going a different route with enchantments and using different spells and going a little less creature heavy and tapping into using other routes and game mechanics.
Interesting.
It is always fun to challenge yourself and try new stuff.
Yeah, nice. I will also say that we always preach, hey, end the game, you know, let's get some damage out there. Let's do something big. And so Karavek, when I heard you chose that, I was like, nice.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what happens there.
Well, speaking of that, Jimmy, you chose Rada Ertekeld.
Yes, because a 2-2 is definitely fastest ending the game.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
In some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, Rada was interesting. Gruul is a color combination that gets played all the time on the show, and very typically it goes into, like, lands matter, and that, to me, is a little bit boring if you just do landfall.deck. So I like taking red-green and seeing where else you can take it. Rada has a very interesting ability that gives you 2 mana whenever she attacks, and I wanted to find a bunch of different ways to use that inside the game and sort of like have a red-green value engine going and get to play some cards that I typically don't play, and you'll see one of them is in the game as well. So it's Sunset Pyramid. So I love those types of cards and clue tokens and all that stuff. So I wanted to find a way to play a red-green deck that obviously still had ramp in it but wasn't just about putting lands onto the battlefield.
And Cassius played Tasigur, the Golden Fang, so let's hear from him about why he chose that commander.
I chose Tasigur because he had the best color combination and had the best ability of the commanders available, I thought.
He just played Tasker because it had the 3 colors.
I think he just played it because it was in that cool new border.
Ah.
The Tasker border was so nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The animation was great, too.
Yeah.
And it's Tasker. I mean, Tasker is very good.
You don't really need a reason to play Tasker, yeah. Honestly. Like, yeah, it's self-evident.
Okay, Josh, you are up last. Tell us about your commander process, because it was actually very different than normal.
Right, so... Okay, so here's the behind-the-scenes story of what happened. Originally, I chose Mangara of Korondor as my commander that I was going to play because I wanted, sort of like Ashlyn, I wanted a challenge. I wanted to try mono-white. And I built almost the entirety of the deck. Happens, if you haven't heard our process before, is, you know, everybody picks their commander, they go away, they brew the deck, and then they provide the list to us, and we assemble the physical decks here at the office. We need to do that for a few reasons. The main one is just so we have control of which versions of cards are played, because we need to have to be able to animate them for VFX, and some versions are really hard to animate as compared to other versions. Mm-hmm. So we just need to be able to pick which versions of cards and stuff like that. So most of the time, we're using our own cards to build the decks. So we get the deck list back, and I've built Mangara, and Jimmy's got Rada, and Ashlyn's got Karavek, and we look at Cassius's deck list for Tasigur, and I'm like, oh, that's a totally different league than my mono white Mangara deck is in. And I messaged Jimmy and Ashlyn, and I'm like, hey, go ahead and make your decks a little stronger.
Yep.
Yep, because we're going to have to be able to compete with the Tasigur deck, and I'm going to literally have to change my commander, because I don't think there's a mono white Mangara deck that can even play it that can have any chance. So then I switched to Joyra because I know that deck is pretty strong and can hold its own in a high powered pod. So so that is how I chose my deck. And we're going to get into the power level and stuff later on in this episode, because it is a big talking point out there. So we'd like to address it. But anyway, that's the story between why we chose all our commanders.
It feels bad for mono white, not going to lie.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just the truth, right? Like, I don't think there is a Mangara deck, no matter what you do, that's going to be able to hang with like a very high-powered Tasigur deck.
Yeah. So it was fun, though. We did get to play all 4 colors of Magic in this show, as people often reference in the comments.
All 4 colors.
All 4.
All right, let's get into some questions about the game itself. We'll start off with rules questions like we always do. There wasn't very many rules, snafus, or confusion in this episode, which I'm pretty proud of, actually.
Yeah.
For one, we didn't screw up a bunch of rules, and for two, we explained the rules pretty well, I guess.
And one of the most complex stack interactions we've ever had in the show.
Oh my gosh, that stack.
So let's talk about the commune with lava. This is a common misunderstanding with spells that have X in their cost. So, well, let's play a clip. We've got a clip from the game here of when Jimmy...
The coolest play of the game.
...plays his huge commune with lava. That's the biggest commune with lava I've ever seen.
Me too. And I'm going to cast commune with lava for 10.
So there's 2 cast triggers. I have Rustic Study.
And I have a Karavek trigger.
Okay, so the Karavek's actually going to resolve first.
Who do you want to point that 12 damage at that is not me or my permanent?
Anyone that's not me or my permanent.
Okay, I will take the 12 damage and I will target Tasigur.
Okay, Tasigur dies. And I will put him in the command zone. Oof.
Since there was 7 excess damage dealt to Tasigur, Twirl's gonna trigger, and I'm gonna point that 7 damage at Joyra.
Yep, Joyra will die. And she will go to the command zone.
And there's 5 excess damage there, so Twirl will trigger again, and I'll point that damage at Snapcaster.
Okay, Snappy dies, so there's 4 excess damage left.
Yep, trigger Twirl again, and that 4 excess damage is going to go at Rada.
Aw, sad. Radha's gonna die and go to the command zone.
All right, so now there's 2 excess damage left.
This is crazy.
And I'm gonna actually send that right at you, Josh.
Yep, I will take 2 and go to 30.
All right. So the rules question was, why is Karavik throwing 12 damage when I cast Commune with Lava? Shouldn't the CMC of the spell or the mana value be 2? And the answer is no. On the stack is something that happens when you cast a spell. When you put the spell out, it's levitating. It's somewhere. It's about to be resolved. And when it's out there, the CMC of the card actually changes based on what you put into it. So in this case, the CMC is 10 plus 2, where X is equal to 10. When the Commune of Lava is in my hand and someone casts something that says, hey, remove a card that's CMC 3 or less, then Commune of Lava is a 2 CMC spell, 2 mana value spell.
This is something that's unique to X spells, right? So like Cyclonic Rift is not a 7 CMC spell when you overload it. But X spells specifically on the stack, their CMC value is equal to whatever you paid for X plus, you know, the other costs. So, yeah, that is the rule. You can look it up. So, technically, we played it correctly, and it should have been the 12 damage from Karavik. But that is a mistake that a lot of people misunderstand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this has come up. This is the second time it's come up with specifically me and you, Jimmy. Because
really?
With our, for during Kozilek for, I think, the austere command.
Yes, yes.
Why do we have to talk about that? What? I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I was like, yeah, there's no way she's going to have a CMC spell. This, oh,
it was
no.
7 or something, right? It was like something a lot. Yeah.
Never say that. There's no way, because then the end result will feel that much worse. You're better off just sip it, you know?
All right, so that was really the only major rules point that a lot of people had questions about. But a strong theme of this episode, as far as the comments go, was that there was a lot of decisions during the game that the audience was questioning by right. all players. So we thought it'd be fun in this episode to give everyone a chance to sort of defend their actions, explain what they were thinking in the moment, and then we can have a discussion and everybody can sort of weigh in. Obviously, during the episode, a lot of us were questioning the decisions of other players about something. So this is a time when we're going to get to hash some things out.
Listen, Salty I was Josh. Questioning my own choices.
Not like I didn't make any mistakes, by the way. We're going to get into that. Let the person who's not in the glass house throw the stones or something. Right, I forget right, to say. Right. Something like that.
There's glass all around us.
There's a lot of glass. Don't throw stones.
Don't be Tago in this case. I will say one thing. Magic is a game, and it is not a competitive environment when we play. We may play more competitive decks, but everyone messes up. So keep that in mind, right? We're not going to sit there and be like, well, you made a bad gameplay decision. That wasn't rules-based, so we got to reset. Like, that just doesn't really happen. If we make a mistake, that's human. That's a part of the game.
I like that about our show. We're not trying to show up some weird perfect form of Commander that actually never gets played in the wild, right?
You're
most
right.
Commander games you play at most tables, I guarantee there are a lot of little rules and mistakes that are happening. And that is how, that's one of the things we like about Magic. And we're trying, you know, Game Nights is a show about showing our love and why we love Magic. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
No one's perfect.
All right, well, let's talk about what some people are calling a broken deal.
Wah, wah.
So, well, let's play the clip here to start it out.
Of the deal? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm going to tap this and play Scheming Symmetry.
Okay.
Who would like to tutor with me?
You choose, right?
I get to choose 2 players.
Ooh.
You know, I will say I had a play and I tried for the betterment of all to not do it. So, you know, I feel like I have gained a little bit of hopefully goodwill from you.
I will say if you choose me, I can get rid of Mystic Remora and Talisman of Dominance.
Oh, gosh. Okay. If you can deal with the Mystic Remora, Jimmy, I will let you tutor.
I'll do that.
All right, I'm going to lay out what happens here. Jimmy, you can defend yourself, and then Ashlyn, I would really like to hear from you here. All right, so Jimmy promises Ashlyn he will get rid of the Mystic Remora in exchange for her choosing him as the second target for Scheming Symmetry, which she does. And then on Jimmy's turn, though, he claims that he needs 3 mana to destroy the Mystic Remora. Then it goes to Cassius. He just lets the Remora die on his own. So Jimmy never has to follow through on the deal that he made. But later we learn Jimmy had Force of Vigor in his hand, or at least appears that because he casts it later, which can be free to cast. So my question is, was this a case of Ashlyn's lawyers failing to include a time frame in the contract with Jimmy, or is this just straight up a bad faith broken deal? Jimmy, defend yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen and people of the court, I would like to first start things off by saying I plead the 5th. Multiple times this episode. Yeah, so, okay, well, you have a couple things to address here, I guess. Okay, the first is the broken promise. Yeah, I definitely did not go through on my promise. That is on me, but it is true. There was no timing restriction. I never said, If you allow me to fetch it up right now, I'll get something to get rid of that Mystic Remora and I'll play it on my turn. So that is a promise that I think maybe, you know, it's right. You can say, oh, it's your fault for not making the promise. It's her fault for not enforcing the, making that sort of the thing. So that was just sort of where I was at. I did fetch Force of Vigor out from my deck, so just everyone knows. I believe the reason I didn't cast it for free is
you want to discard the card?
Yeah, right. So like I wouldn't want to have to discard the card to cast it for free. Also, you can't do it on your turn. Don't forget. Right. So you have to wait for someone else's turn to do it. So on my turn, I was like, well, I'm not going to not ramp. And if I can still cast this for free on the Mystic Remora, then I'll do that. So I pass the turn and I'm pulling the card and be able to, the ability to cast it. Right. And then, you know, Cassius decided that that was the time to get rid of it. So
that actually makes a lot of sense to me. I forgot about the clause where you can't do it on your turn. So if he had kept it around, you're saying you would have Force of Vigor it to uphold your end of the bargain?
Yeah, I think because, like, right, had Cassius paid one mana into it, I know for a fact he might draw another three cards as a result, and my Force of Vigor is going to draw him a card at the same time because it will trigger the Mystic Remora. So that to me is like, well, you know what? I'm gonna see if he keeps it around, cumulative upkeep, and then if it is, then I have to exile a green card to do it.
All right, Ashlyn, let me ask you, are you buying this defense?
I don't know, because I scheming symmetried on my turn, didn't I?
Yes, and so...
But it puts it top of library.
Oh, top of library, okay, yeah. I mean, I was a little surprised, not going to lie. I was wondering what on earth you could have gotten that cost so much, because there are cheaper removals.
True.
But in all honesty, like, at the same time, by that point, I feel like Cassius had already gotten like so much value out of it that it really didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he got rid of it. So, broken deal. I do feel like it was a little bit of like, yeah, what are you going to do with that? I do think it was a little bit that you didn't hold up your end of the bargain.
True.
But, yeah. But at the end of the day, he got rid of it anyway, so...
Yeah, I think the real thing that I should apologize for is that I end up using that Force of Vigor to get rid of your enchantment that you play on your turn.
Yeah.
But let us not forget that it is that move that allowed me to hijack his swan song.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was going to say, is it actually ends up saving us in a weird way that you
it
didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't cast Force of Vigor, he doesn't swan song, and then I can't deflecting swat and stop the first time choicer. So we would have had no cards in our hand.
Right.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, Jimmy, you saved us all.
Yeah, I would like to use this moment to tell everyone that says, are these games scripted, to just look at what happened in this small discussion? There is no way that we would ever sit around being like, okay,
you
then
couldn't
if
script
then.
That.
Yeah. And then and then. It's like, good Lord,
you
no way.
You spent like 2 weeks just trying to figure out what.
One, yeah, two turns.
And that's the thing, like, when it comes to like those types of deals, like, that's why it doesn't like, it's kind of like, well, it really didn't. It actually helped us. It didn't cause a huge thing, like, and that's why you walk away and you're like, it doesn't really bother me, because in the end, like, look what it led to.
Yeah.
See, my takeaway from that is just, you know, make sure that the lawyers put a time frame into your contracts from now on.
Yeah.
That's the learning lesson there.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say is that the 3-mana comment, I kind of just said it to say it because everyone thinks of Reclamation Sage, right? In terms of like,
you don't want to tip your hand too much.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, this is how it's got to go. I don't want to tell people it's an instant speed. I can do it, right?
For
like
free.
Maybe Cassius plays another powerful enchantment on his turn. In that case, I blow that up, right?
Yeah, you didn't actually say, hey, what I got cost 3 CMC also. I liked you. You did not technically lie. You said, well, green is known for you needing 3 CMC to do things.
Yeah, even though it's not
very
true.
Very interesting wording. That is true. Green is known for needing 3 CMC to do things, but you didn't say, that's what I need.
Yeah.
Very Truth. Tricky. Well, keep an eye on Jimmy is all
no,
I'm saying.
No. Why do I do this show? I feel like this is actively losing me value.
All right, let's move on here to Ashlyn's politics. Ashlyn, you had, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt as if you came into the game, you had already sort of pre-planned that there was a certain political move that you were going to employ when you were deploying Karavec. Before you answer, let's play the clip here.
Then I will tap out again to cast my commander, Karavec the Merciless.
Sweet.
All right, my commander is here. I'm super excited for him to come out and play because now we can really get some damage thrown around. But I got a little bit of politics I want to try and employ. And so I have a deal for the table.
Oh.
Hold on. Before you make that deal, there's a risk study trigger.
I cannot pay the one.
Okay, I will draw.
So, Karavek, the merciless. Mm-hmm. My deal for the table is I will let you choose what that target is when you cast a spell, as long as it is not me or any of my permanents.
So, Ashlyn, you basically make the deal as soon as you play Karavek, or you offer the deal that, like, hey, whoever casts the spell, when Karavek triggers, I will let you choose where the damage goes if you don't target my stuff. Is this premeditated, something you thought about going into the game, or?
Yeah, it was definitely something I had thought about going into the game as, like, what is a fun spin I could put on this? And I, at the moment, I had thought that that type of politicking could maybe give me an advantage. And yeah, that's something I premeditated.
Now, what made you come up with, you know, that political maneuver? Was it really just for fun, or?
Yeah, I had gotten the idea actually from, like, watching people chat about, like, their favorite commanders on Twitter, and someone had posted that they really enjoyed doing that at their table, and I was like, that's a really fun idea. I should try it. And that's what I did. And yeah.
Jimmy, what do you think about this political ploy?
I said my thoughts in the interview, which is I actually like it a lot just because, you know, it does do the similar thing where it deflects a little bit off of you, even though you're clearly the one that owns the card. And at the end of the day, if you were in, like, a client, you'd be the one clicking on the things, right, to send the damage out. So I thought it was actually really interesting because it gave other players sort of like a false sense of, like, ownership over it and being like, oh, cool, well, that's great. In that case, I'm not going to be afraid to play my spells, which could be to Ashlyn's benefit, right? Because if those spells are big and costly, maybe you think twice about playing them with Karavek out. But now that you know where the damage goes, it's like, cool, I'm adding another text line to this spell or ability or whatever.
Yeah, I think the reason I wanted to go with it, it was a fun idea, but also knowing that Cassius has such a high powered deck and that, you know, we're playing with blue players that have counter spells and everything. My commander costs a lot, for one. And so I don't have a lot of opportunities to cast him. Mm-hmm. And so with that in mind, I wanted to have a safeguard for being able to cast him. So, hey, it's not a threat because you're going to have agency in when he's out, right? Like, I wanted to make him less of a threat. So maybe I would be able to cast him more. And yeah, making people feel more comfortable with this commander being on the board and less scared of me and having more agency in what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah, good. I'm glad we're being honest now, because I didn't believe you when you said you were just doing it for fun. There's a lot of really very shrewd reasons to make this play. And I think that, like, getting to the heart of, like, why it's advantageous for Ashlyn to make that kind of a deal kind of helps you understand it. And I like what you said there about making it more likely to resolve, less likely to be killed.
Oh, yeah.
Is a really good reason. And I also think Jimmy nailed it on the head, too, with deflecting blame. So if she has a card and we play a bunch of spells and it kills somebody's thing, it's like, well, I'm kind of mad at Ashlyn. But if I can make that so it's like, no, I told Jimmy he could point it out, whatever. So it's really Jimmy that you should be mad at. And just muddying the waters of who to blame for what kind of helps you out where Karavek's concerned. So I thought it was a really shrewd move.
And if I can get my opponents to focus on each other, like, that's great. Like, if I can have Karavek do damage to other people, but it's Josh doing that damage to Jimmy, that's wonderful. That takes so much thinking and pressure off of me.
Yeah, definitely, like, the pressure being taken off. Also, it would suck, right? 7 CMC commander, Josh just bounces it. Someone does something to get rid of it back to your hand. That sets you back so far in a deck like that that's trying to keep him out on the board, yeah.
And as you saw during the game, I didn't have a lot of card advantage at all, so I had to take as much of it as I could get any way I could get.
All right, let's go to another broken deal.
Oh,
so
no.
Later in the game, Jimmy casts his Commune with Lava for 12, which we discussed earlier. And, well, here's what happens.
Who do you want to point that 12 damage at that is not me or my permanents?
Anyone that's not me or my permanents.
Okay, I will take the 12 damage and I will target Tastiger.
Okay, Tastiger dies. And I will put him in the command zone. Oof.
Since there was 7 excess damage dealt to Tastiger, Twirl's gonna trigger, and I'm gonna point that 7 damage at Joyra.
Yep, Joyra will die. And she will go to the command zone.
And there's 5 excess damage there, so Twirl will trigger again, and I'll point that damage at Snapcaster.
Okay, Snappy dies, so there's 4 excess damage left?
Yep, trigger Twirlf again, and that 4 excess damage is going to go at Rada.
Aw, sad. Rada's gonna die and go to the command zone.
All right, so now there's 2 excess damage left.
This is crazy.
And I'm gonna actually send that right at you, Josh.
Yep, I will take 2 and go to 30.
Ow.
So, So Jimmy, you say directly to her, and some people were kind of like, hey, Ashlyn broke a deal here. You say, because she says it's 12 damage, you can point it where you want, according to my Karavik deal. And you go, well, I'll let you point it, just don't hit any of my stuff. And, you know, all your stuff ends up dead at the end of that. So, Ashlyn, defend yourself.
Well, from a bird's eye view, I did do that, and I'm sorry. I didn't realize that at the time, because, yeah, when you zoom in, I was like, oh, yeah, then I'll point it at Cassius. And so, technically, I thought, okay, Karavek did not do that, and then Torolf did it. So, in my head, it was all Torolf doing all the damage, and therefore, I did not break any part of a deal or anything. But then when you zoom out, you're like, oh, I kind of did do that, huh?
Right. Does the butterfly flapping swing cause a hurricane?
Yeah, exactly. I'm with Ashlyn here. She just gave you control of the Karavik damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, don't hit my stuff. And she did not hit your stuff with the Karavik damage. But then the rest of the damage is Torolf damage. And she never promised anybody anything about the Torolf damage.
Yeah. It's interesting because the Torolf damage, right, it's Torolf is making it happen, but it's because of Karavik's damage that Torolf is able to sort of splash it onto other things.
What if Torolf read it makes the original source of the damage continue to do the damage?
Then it's a little muddy.
Yeah. But Torolf is actually doing the damage.
Yeah, that's all
right? He just counts up how much excess was there.
But is the excess damage the same damage that Karavek made, just placed somewhere
else? It's not. Yeah, I don't
believe
it is.
Then what is trample damage? Is the trample damage
the same?
Torolf
was a green card. It would be green damage.
Ah, yes, right? That's right. You're right. Yeah. So he shapes the color of it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing here is that I try to make the same deal that Ashlyn does at the beginning of the game with her Karavek, right? Or not the beginning, with the like, no, you choose. But my lawyers would have advised me to like look at her entire board state and make sure you're not just protecting yourself from one thing if you're gonna just say that.
You should have said like Josh's face or Cash's face, right? Because there's no excess damage for Torolf in that moment. But it might have been good for you for the whole board to sort of die at that moment too. So.
Yeah.
Part of me too also wanted to give the control back to you, Ashlyn, because I was like, you know what? I don't wanna choose anymore. I don't wanna be a part of this game, these shenanigans. It's your fault.
You don't wanna get blamed.
Yeah, and then I got a lot of things dead. Good job.
There's no escaping.
This one, I love the subtitle on it. It is Chain of Vapor Timing. So at the end of my fourth turn, Josh, you see that Narset's there and you want to get rid of it. It's not actually the end of my turn. I think it's when I cast a second spell because of your Rhystic Study. You wouldn't be able to draw that additional card. So in response, you get rid of the Narset. You know, you're fearing a wheel effect and Narset's at 3 loyalty at this point and you bounce it. And then let's just see what happens on the table here.
Okay, so trigger Rhystic Study. I think in response to the Rhystic Study trigger, I'm going to tap for a blue, and I'm going to cast Chain of Vapor, targeting Narset.
Ah.
So it gets bounced? Bounced. Narset is back in your hand.
Sweet.
Cash, you do have the choice to sacrifice a land and cast Chain of Vapor yourself. Do you want to do that?
Nope.
Okay. And now the Rhystic Study trigger is still on the stack. Jimmy, do you want to pay?
I will not pay.
Okay, I will draw. So I'm bouncing Narset now because if she's not on the table, I can draw another card if Jimmy doesn't pay for Rhystic Study. Also, I was going to make this play anyway. I was just waiting to see if Ashlyn or Jimmy would get rid of her instead, but it looks like he's not going to do that, so I might as well do it now.
Okay, Cassius doesn't sack a land to continue the Chain of Vapor, but a lot of comments pointed out, Josh, why didn't you wait to Chain of Vapor before Narset goes to before Cash's wheels, because you could see the spell in the second, then you could get rid of it in almost identical timing to what you did for your Rhystic Study.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Defend yourself!
Yeah, a lot of people were like, why don't you just wait till the wheel's on the stack, bounce Narset, then you get rid of his wheel, because you would wheel at that point, but you wouldn't lose all the cards in your hand because Narset's no longer on the table when the wheel resolves. There was a couple reasons why I did consider that line of play and rejected it. Because one, if I do it in the moment that I did it, I'm likely to draw that extra card off Rhystic Study. because Narset was keeping me from drawing a second card during Jimmy's turn.
Right.
If I get rid of Narset now, Jimmy doesn't pay. I draw an extra card. That is what ended up happening. So I get an extra card there. And then also, I was like, well, if I wait, there's two things that could really go wrong here. One is he doesn't even have the wheel. Because we didn't know he had it. I just thought he might have it. Yes. And two is he gets some kind of backup plan, like a counterspell online, that he's now able to
hold up,
counter my Chain of Vapor when he goes to wheel, depending on what wheel he uses. And I believe at the moment that I did the chain, he was tapped out, so I knew it was going to resolve. And so in my mind, it was better to cast the Chain of Vapor, and it made it very unlikely he would be able to Narset and wheel in some way on the same turn, mm-hmm. and give us another rotation of the table. I get an extra card draw from the Rhystic Study, another rotation of the table to figure out an answer to it. And I just felt that that was a little bit safer than holding up an answer that he could potentially counter.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think also of note is that there is a chance that Cassius doesn't even replay the Narset. Let's say he doesn't have a wheel in his hand.
Right.
And that maybe he plays something else out, and then, you know, now Josh gets the full benefit, right? His Rhystic Study will trigger all the time.
Yeah, that's another really good point, right? He might have a bigger play. He wants to make more, like, higher CMC.
Yeah.
In which case, Narset's not the right play to just deploy again. And yeah, that was another consideration.
Okay. All right, this next one is a pretty controversial one. It is the timing of a very particularly powerful card. So let's roll the clip and see exactly what it is.
So I'm thinking about playing my commander here, because then all anyone needs to do is play a 3 CMC card, and I can get rid of Narset. But I'm pretty happy with what I drew this turn, so I think I'm going to play something else. All right, so I think I know what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to set myself up, and I will cast Fiery Emancipation.
Oh my god.
So this is a really powerful card. Triples all the damage that Ashlyn's going to do, but it doesn't do anything right now, and it doesn't kill the Narset. So what damage are you going to be tripling when you have no cards in your hand? I just don't like this play at all. I think this is going to go south.
Aha. A lot of people were asking this, Ashlyn. Yes. Why did you play Fiery Emancipation right then? Especially after, well, Josh, you can probably tell the world what you were saying at that point.
Kill Narset. Right, yeah. So you had a choice there, really,
yes.
that we know of, which is play your commander, which would hopefully kill the Narset through whatever Jimmy casts on his turn, and you chose to play Fiery Emancipation instead. So defend yourself, Ashlyn.
All right.
Rolling up the sleeves, getting ready.
Buckle up. So there's a couple things here. Yes, I could have played Karavek. I could have. I drew Fiery Emancipation that turn, I believe. That was the card that I drew. I was very excited for. And I believe at the time I had Chandra on the board already. And so couple things here. There was a wheel that was probably going to happen, says the bird chirping in my ear, aka Josh.
He was right.
I wasn't as scared for the wheel because I had Chandra out, so I could theoretically be drawing or looking at the top two cards every turn and casting something still, even if there was a wheel. And if I cast them, I had Fiery Emancipation out and could have played Karavek the next turn and be doing so much damage with that. So I would have been okay.
Is my
core belief there. That was my core belief in playing that card, and that's why I did it. My other belief was that I believed in the heart of the cards that Josh always has. And I believed that Josh was going to find a way, like he always does, to find an answer to this problem. And lo and behold, I just want to say, what happened?
You were right. You just lost your emancipation along the way, unfortunately.
I did. Right. I paid the cost. But, yeah.
I mean, we got super lucky with the swan song there.
And had Cassius, he says it, right? Like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should just let my Sylvan Library go.
But the card I played still led to fixing this whole problem.
All right.
What do you think of the play, Jimmy?
Honestly, I don't know, right? There's a lot of cases to be made here because Ashlyn, if she is playing right, you are already restricted in your card draw. You haven't gotten Phyrexian Arena to work for you yet. your loss is not as severe as Josh or Jimmy's loss in this case when you have to discard your hand. And like you said, you know, if it just means you're living off the top of your library, that's fine, because Karavek would just be doing so, like, three times damage. It's insane. And maybe that would have convinced Cassius to, I don't know, play a little differently. So I think it goes both ways. I don't know what I would have done in that spot. Maybe I would have just tried to play the Karavek. But the thing is, with the Karavek, it also incentivizes Jimmy to play along and play a spell to target it, right? So there's a lot going on there.
That's not a big ask, though.
I don't know. I'm going to disagree with the play.
I think, Ashlyn, listen, you've kicked my butt enough times that I know that you're a good player, so it's not a reflection on you as a player. But there's a few things I would think about in this case. One is, the only reason you're able to cast Karavek in that moment is due to a non-land card on board, Chandra. So if Chandra dies, it takes away your ability to play Karavek the next turn. So there's two ways this could go badly. Also, Narset's currently turning off your Phyrexian Arena, which... So it's basically worth a card to you to kill Narset. So even if Karavek dies, I think you're a little bit ahead in there. Also, Karavek's a thing we can see at all times. So I think playing Karavek first and then Fire Emancipation the next turn is a little more surprising. Whereas playing Fire Emancipation immediately says, oh crap, we cannot let Karavek live because that's three damage. Whereas in the reverse, it's harder to stop it.
I see, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Yeah, so Not just because I thought the wheel was going to happen, it was bad. I do think it was probably the correct play, quote unquote, to play Karavek in that situation. Now, obviously, I don't think you're crazy for having a line and a reason that right. you know, went the way you did.
But there's also a world where Cassius doesn't have his Time Twister, and that Fire Emancipation goes on to just wreck a lot of face, you know?
Yeah, and I think the other thing I was maybe hoping for was also that maybe my Fiery Emancipation was enough of a threat to maybe make Cassius want to deal with it. Maybe.
Well, but one of the ways to deal with it is to make us have no cards in hand, right? Yeah, so... Yeah, well, anyway, that's the way it went down. And you're right, though. It did sort of inadvertently lead to the solution to the whole Time Twister thing the first time around.
Yeah.
So it didn't go it didn't actually go as badly as it seemed that it went for us.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, I would totally probably play the Karavek. But that was my reasoning at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a lot easier to know the right decisions when you're looking back than in the moment when
the
you
cameras
don't know what's
aren't going.
Happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have this bird in your ear, all that.
So obviously, we know what panned out here. Cassius tried to Time Twister with Narset out, and we just narrowly managed to stop that in a combination of Jimmy using the card that Ashlyn helped him tutor for on Ashlyn's own card, which he tried to counter, and then I was able to use Deflecting Swat to stop the Time Twister.
Wow.
Okay, well, coming up, we're going to discuss some of the biggest moments in the game that we haven't discussed, including, Jimmy, why the hell did you give Cassius back that whole Breacher? We're going to talk about that, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
All right, welcome back to the roundtable where we are discussing the top moments and debating things about Game Night's Time Twister.
Just Time kidding. Spiral Remastered.
Time Spiral Remastered, yeah. I can't get Twister out of my head.
You just want to call it Time Twister the set? I wonder why, because that card was very pretty brutal.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so there were a couple of really nutty stacks in this game, and there was a really crazy stack moment at the end of Josh's final turn. Ashlyn goes to cast Colligan's Command, and, well, as written here in the outline, all hell breaks loose. And I'm put in this position. I have Vidalcan Ori out cards in my hand, and it's about to go away. So, you know what? I got to dump my hand, and then the stack just gets nuts. So let's take a look at just how crazy it was.
End of your turn, I will play Culligan's Command. Choosing two, I'm going to return target creature card from my graveyard to my hand. I'm going to target Karavek, and I'm going to blow up Jimmy's Vidalcan Ori.
In response, I am going to flash out Underworld Breach. I'm going to escape Jessica's Will from my graveyard. I'm going to exile three cards. I'm going to spend three of my floating red mana and one green on the table to recast my commander, Radha, heir to Keld. I'm going to recast Jessica's Will with Underworld Breach, exiling three cards from my graveyard.
I think what I'm going to do in response is Brainstorm.
Okay, hold on, hold on.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to flash out Hull Breacher.
All right, so Brainstorm's still in the stack. I'm going to tap two blue. I'm going to Narset's Reversal, the Jessica's Will.
Okay. I'm going to use my one red floating and my last mana here to cast Burnout.
In response to the Burnout, I'm going to pay a blue and a colorless, and I'm going to flash out Snapcaster Mage. So I'm going to target my Mana Drain.
In response,
yep.
I will Flusterstorm. I will target the Mana Drain.
Yeah, legit. Probably the craziest stack we've ever had on Game Nights, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the one, right? Like, you could say this, the counterspell war between black and... You know,
with Rachel?
Yeah. That was like, wow, I can't believe that happened. But that stack was nothing compared to how many plates were on this one.
Yeah, so first of all, a lot of people commenting, just loving the complexity of that particular stack interaction. And, I'm glad everybody was able to follow it. We spent a lot of time in post trying to figure out how to convey all the moments so that you understood what was happening but didn't get confused.
Right.
So I'm glad, hopefully, we did a good job for that. So the outcome of this whole thing was that I got overcommitted. I made the mistake of giving Cassius a treasure off the Rhystic Study because it's a May ability.
Yeah.
And he's able to use that one mana. So it turns out to be a huge mistake to Flusterstorm and then stop my whole plan. Kind of immediately turns to rubble because I'm fighting you pretty hard, Jimmy, to stop you from going off.
Another Jessica's Will, basically, right? Like a bigger Jessica's Will.
So there was a lot of comments asking me, why did I try so hard? Why was I throwing so many resources into that moment to try and stop Jimmy?
Yeah, Josh, I just wanted to have some fun.
So I will defend myself here. So here was my thinking. Well, two things happened. One is I didn't really, at the start of that, think that it was going to escalate to the point that it did, right? I'm like, I'll stop that. And then that'll be that. And then Jimmy's like, no, I'll do this. I'm like, well, okay, I'll stop that too. And then he's like, no, I'll do this. And I'm like, oh, crap. I'm pretty deep now. I guess I'll stop that too.
Yeah, right? You're pot committed, as they say. Yeah.
Yep. So I also think, I don't think people understand how close Jimmy actually was towards winning the game in this moment. So here's the thing about having Underworld Breach and Jessica's Will. If he gets one more piece that's putting things in his graveyard, he can pretty much draw his entire deck and have infinite mana. It's close. So let's imagine he has Wheel of Fortune or something like that he gets a hold of. He casts that. It puts seven cards into his graveyard. Jessica's Will's in his graveyard. With Underworld Breach out, he exiles...
Actually, I only needed a couple more cards because my hand was low at that point.
Yeah.
So I put even two cards in there, even like a Faithless Looting. Anything that just gets cards into my graveyard.
So then he uses Underworld Breach to cast Jessica's Will again, gives him a ton of mana, exile the top three cards of his library, which he can cast. Then, with Underworld Breach, he recasts the Faithless Looting or the Wheel of Fortune or whatever it is. And what's that do? Puts more cards in his graveyard. What can he do with that? Cast Jessica's Will again. What's that do? Give him mana and cards. What can he do with that? Recast the Faithless Looting and the Wheel of Fortune. I've died to this a couple of times now. Jessica's Will, very, very powerful with Underworld Breach. It is like the combo that if you don't see it coming... What happens is Jimmy ends up with like 40 or 50 mana in his mana pool. He's exiled the top three cards of his library 10 or 15 times. one X spell kills everybody in that instance. So I was scared. The second time he cast Jessica's Will, I'm like, it's pretty dangerous. If we just let it resolve, it could be game over. It's possible. And I was already committed enough that it was like, listen, is that likely to happen? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know what's in his hand. But also, like, I've already got two or three spells invested in this little fight. And I could lose. If I lose the fight, I probably better just try and win the fight. And so that last Snapcaster Mage into the mana drain. Remember, I was trying to get a hold of the Jessica's Will so I could get enough mana to kill the Hull Breacher before the Brainstorm resolved, because I simultaneously did not want Cassius to get enough treasure to cast Omniscience on his turn.
Yeah.
So if I just don't give him that one treasure for Flusterstorm, I think the entire game is totally different. I stop Jimmy in that moment, kill the Hull Breacher, and he can't cast Omniscience on his turn. But that one mana I gave him really, really came back to bite me.
The
May
ability, the thirst. You wanted those cards, Josh.
But we were one little mistake away from, like, at least pretty much guaranteeing survival for one more round at the table.
Yeah. And, like, who knows, right? I might not have drawn anything off that Jessica's Will that would have gotten me to that point. But, Josh, I think you were correct in stopping it, because I had that manic look in my eyes, which is just like, it's happening. It didn't matter that I had to do it right now, but it's still going to go off, because Vidalcanori is pretty crazy in that situation.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was my thinking, and that's why I went so deep, because I was actually worried about losing the game on the spot in that moment. And simultaneously, I was trying to make it so that Cassius couldn't cast Omniscience on his turn. So there was just a lot of things I was trying to juggle, and I dropped the ball. Huh? That's what happens when you try and juggle a lot of things.
Yeah, sorry. You dropped the treasure, actually, on Cassius's board, and we all know what happens.
I just wanted my commander back.
All right, let's talk about, speaking of your commander, Hull Breacher immunity here near the end of the game. You seemingly on purpose leaving Hull Breacher and letting it live through multiple chances to kill it with Karavec and or Toralf.
Mm-hmm.
Toralf really stands out because you would literally kill everything else, I think, on the board except for Hull Breacher, like purposely leaving it around. So a lot of people are asking, like, why leave Hull Breacher around? Ashlyn, defend yourself.
Okay. Okay, first, before I defend myself, let's play the clip, because I have something to say.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, this is great. Toralf is going to work clearing out that board and making sure none of that damage is going to waste.
So this Karavec and Toralf interaction, pretty cool here. She does leave the Hull Breacher on the battlefield, though. I know she's keeping it there because it's stopping my Rhystic Study and she's scared of Jyn Gitaxias. But Cassius is about to cast Omniscience next turn. And I don't care what the position of the board state is. If a player is going to get Omniscience out, all bets are off. I would try and hamper them in any way I could. Yeah, so just leave Hull Breacher alive. What gives, Ashlyn?
Well, honestly, you had the Jyn Gitaxias out, and I really didn't want my hand size going down to one, and you getting a complete reloaded hand at the time. And I felt like, since it's still that same turn rotation, I'm going to have more opportunity to get rid of him with a Toralf trigger anyway, so there's still time. Like, we still have your turn.
Yeah, if Cassius casts anything, you could kill over on Josh's turn, maybe? Because Josh had, it was like at three suspend counters, I think, when you decided to go face with the damage.
Exactly. And you still have, what was that artifact? The clock?
Clock spinning.
Yeah, clock spinning. You still had
I had clock spinning, which is the buyback.
Buyback time.
Spell that removes.
Spell, yes.
Counters.
Yeah, you still had the clock spinning spell.
Okay. I'm just going to help clean this up for everybody out there, because we're talking without naming cards. So Jyn Gitaxias, I have suspended with three time counters on it, which you can see. It's not actually on the battlefield. So you're saying you were worried that I would rush that out with my clock spinning. If you remember, I did have to reveal that I had clock spinning because I killed the Tireless Tracker after the Toxic Deluge earlier. So everybody knows I have clock spinning in my hand, which can remove time counters. So, and it has buybacks. So on my upkeep, the next turn, I could remove two counters, then one comes off naturally, and Jyn Gitaxias comes into play. So you're saying if Hull Breacher is out, you don't think I'll do that?
Absolutely.
Right. You're right. I wouldn't do it with Hull Breacher out, because then instead of drawing seven cards, well, Cassius would get seven treasure.
Right.
And exactly.
But a lot of people forget that Jyn Gitaxias has that other thing that means all of my opponents have a hand size of one. So you don't want to have a hand size of one.
Yeah. And so either way, like, if I get rid of Hull Breacher, it's not helping me anyways. Like, I get null, it nullifies. Like, get rid of Hull Breacher, I get Jyn Gitaxias. So either way, I'm not getting an advantage off Phyrexian Arena. So, like,
Well, you can still get the draw for Exing Arena, but you will have to discard. You'll have to discard on your end step down to one card.
No, it's down to zero because its maximum hand size reduced by 7.
Yeah,
so unless it also increases it. Yeah.
Either
so
way, yeah, it's no bueno. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, I guess, like, for you at that moment, Hull Breacher isn't stopping you, but a player like Josh, it is stopping much more. And if Josh is going to cast any spell on his turn, that could give you an opportunity to kill the Hull Breacher, I guess. And at that point, I don't know, Cassius seems like he has way enough mana to be able to do the thing he's going to do. So, yeah, I can see why on that turn when I cast the 12 CMC Commune with Lava, why you would just keep going face or somewhere else with it.
Yeah, I think because we're going to move on to another thing, which I teased before the break. I think what's happening here is too much focus on one part of Hull Breacher's ability, but not enough on the other. So Hull Breacher stops your opponents from drawing cards, which is bad. And it is, of course, the thing that you think about when you're an opponent and they've got a Hull Breacher. But there's another part to Hull Breacher that we weren't considering, I think, enough in the moment, is that it creates treasure for the user. So the fact that Hull Breacher is going to give Cassius treasure is really, really bad when he has a very powerful 10 CMC spell in his hand called Omniscience that it's going to allow him to cast, because he only had like 6 or 7 lands and one of them was Maze of Ith. So Jimmy, my question, this is kind of related, so I just want to wrap it all together.
Yeah.
Is there's a point, before it's actually before this, I think, Toralf Karavec moment, geez, where Cassius activates Tasigur and you ask him, like, what do you want back? He says Hull Breacher and you give it to him.
Yeah.
And so my question is, why did you give him the card that's going to give him the mana to cast Omniscience?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So I was looking at his graveyard and the options, I'm sorry, not great. I think it was Toxic Deluge, Time Twister, and Hull Breacher. You sort of like write damned if you do, damned if you don't. That's how I saw it and felt at the moment. I'm pretty sure those were the three cards in there.
I'm pretty sure too.
I don't have many abilities in my deck that, right, like I already know I'm going to get this Commune with Lava. This is my big plan. This is the way I'm going to stay in the game. That doesn't draw me cards. It's not going to get stopped by Hull Breacher. And sort of similar argument, right? I'm not as affected by it. I know I'm going to spend my mana all on this thing. People like Josh, though, are much more affected by it. It's stopping Ashlyn's Phyrexian Arena. So I think I just looked at the options and went, well, I don't want him another Toxic Deluge. That's just going to make things even harder to recover from. And I don't want him to Time Twister.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think in this case, I was okay with Hull Breacher because it just didn't affect me as much. And I didn't realize it was going to get him to that Omniscience level until maybe too late. So.
Yeah, because Time Twister, it doesn't seem that bad in that moment. Like, it just reloads everybody's hands. Like, it's not great that Cassius does that, but at the same time, it gets really Omniscience if he does it.
I mean, this was definitely a very self-serving thing for me here, right? Which is like, I just want to be able to cast my giant Commune with Lava. I'm not as affected by this. I don't care that my opponents don't want this back. Maybe that's even why I want it back more, because I don't care as much as they do. So I think the problem was, though, that it just funneled too much power into Cassius's already powerful deck. And then as a result, we felt, obviously, the effects of that as we died to an infinite combo type thing.
I mean, is Time Twister safe when we know you have a Jinx Ataxis?
Yeah, it doesn't change that equation in any way.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets really hard to talk about this stuff because you can just get into hypothetical after hypothetical.
Seriously.
I mean, I guess if you think Jinga Taxius is worse than him having Omniscience.
Right.
Which I don't, but...
And he also only had 2 cards in his hand, right? He was, like, pretty low on cards as well, so I didn't feel as bad about that Omniscience. Now, obviously, I'm sure he's got tons of ways to draw more cards and reload his hand, but in that moment, you know, I think I was like, I'm fine with the Hull Breacher. Also, maybe I'm just coming up with reasons after the fact, we do have a Karavec out, and Karavec is going to be able to point damage at that thing at some point. So I think, like, maybe in my head, too, I was like, it'll get taken care of when it needs to, but I don't want to be the one to have to deal with it. And so, and I don't want to get Toxic Deluged either, because I think that would set everyone else back in a way that we couldn't recover. I guess? I don't know.
I have one more question for you, actually. Yeah. It's not on the thing, but you brought it up because I was, is the Commune with Lava itself.
Mm-hmm. Why not leave mana open?
Yeah, why not do it for like 7? Because you did, we didn't play it up in the episode, but one of the cards you hit off of it, and I don't know if you would have hit it if you only did it for 7.
Yeah.
So who knows? And I'm not saying that it's the correct decision just because this would have worked in this case. But one of the cards you hit was Crimson Grip, which would have saved us if you just had a few mana left over instead of doing it for the full 12. Like, did you look at it later and be like, I probably should have just done it for like X is equal to 8 so that I could maybe cast some of the spells I get off it.
Yeah, I think I was so focused on the text of Commune with Lava that says you have it till the end of your next turn to do it that I was like, I'm just going to do this then. I also had planned on casting that card at instant speed, thanks to Vidalcan Orrery, right before my turn started, you know?
Right. But you wanted to use the Rada mana. I understand that. A lot of people did ask, why didn't you wait until Cash's turn? But Rada gives you 2 mana in the moment you want to use it.
Yeah, so I should have actually taken that 2 mana and held 3 lands back, right? Mm-hmm. So that I flip less, but that way I'm able to cast the spell, that 3 CMC remove a target artifact or enchantment spell that everyone knows is green on the right target. So that was definitely a mistake on my part. I think I got kind of sort of blood in the eyes, you know?
Who doesn't?
I smelled blood in the water. I don't know, something about blood.
I think you were pot committed to this idea that like he's going to cast Omniscience. He only has a couple other cards in hand, and those aren't going to kill us.
If you
make that read, then it is right to just be like, set myself up for my next turn, because after that turn,
yeah,
we got to get rid of Omniscience and sort of clean this stuff up.
Yep.
All right, I wanted to reflect really quickly on play mistakes because there's a lot of comments that are kind of pretty disparaging about the play mistakes. And listen, we all made them, right? And I think I made the biggest one in the game, which I'll talk about in a little bit. I already alluded to. But every single player in the game made mistakes multiple times. Cassius ends up winning, but he actually makes the mistake of casting his Swan Song on Jimmy's Force of Vigor.
Right.
Which was a pretty big mistake that he's able to overcome. You know, I think people, like, they watch content and gameplay and they're pretty mean about that kind of stuff and they act as if they don't make play mistakes or whatever, and we're not trying to present Magic as a game where we don't make mistakes. If you watch the Pro Tour, the pro players that are right. have been doing it forever make mistakes all the time.
You can be a little more critical in that regard, right? Because that's they're there to be competitive and to play at the highest level, but that's not what Game Nights is.
I think it's fine to point out mistakes because I like it. I like to learn from them. Just, you know, you don't have to be mean about it is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Don't be mean about it.
Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. Okay, please. Let's talk about another thing that was a really big discussion point. And probably, it's not like a specific question, but if you just grouped it, categorized it as its own talking point, it was probably the most commented on thing in the episode. And that was the relative power levels of the deck in this game. So there's a lot of discussion and a lot of people saying that they thought Cassius's deck was way more powerful than the rest of our decks. So I thought this would be fun to talk about. Okay, so Jimmy, let's start with you.
Yes.
What do you think about the relative power levels of everybody's decks in this game? Do you think Cassius's deck was way stronger than everybody else's?
I think Cassius's deck was stronger in a specific way, which is it definitely is closer to what would be considered a competitive EDH build. But in general, I think Cass just per card had a higher card quality average. Right. And I think that allows him to play powerful spells like Hold Breacher and, you know, Narset Time Twister, that sort of stuff. Right. But, you know, those Narset plus Wheel of Fortune type effect is not something that people go like, oh, my gosh, it's so broken. It's so powerful. It is very powerful. But that's not something that I think makes it like leagues and leagues above the rest. Now, I think the thing that adds to people's perceptions is how the deck gets played and the way that the player handles the deck can make it seem, I think, more intimidating, which makes sense. From Cassius being a pro football player, I think he knows how to present that in a way that makes it to maybe other people watching going like, oh my gosh, it's so unfair how powerful that deck is. But Josh, your deck can drop an Eldrazi on like turn 4 or 5, right?
Yeah.
So
if I draw them.
So that's the other thing, right? Like Josh's deck's power level is different. It doesn't show itself until he flashes out that Jinkataxius or that massive, massive crazy creature spell thanks to his commander's ability. So I think it just gets represented differently. And so people can overinflate certain things.
How about you, Ashlyn? What do you think about the relative power levels of the decks in this game?
I think the power levels were... I feel like they were pretty decent. I mean... Obviously, I agree with Jimmy as far as like a per card basis of comparison, but I also think that we've talked generally about like the process when we go into these games, and like at the core of every commander game that we've talked about as well is like you always have that discussion together of like what the expectation is when you come to the table, and we have that, right? Like we knew what Cassius was bringing. Mm-hmm. We all were like, hey, yeah, this is fine. Like I was excited for the challenge. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna build this deck and I'm gonna try to take down whatever comes my way with Cassius or anyone else. And I thought I built a deck that was strong enough to go up against it. And at the end of the day, I was really happy with how it held up against everyone else. So I felt like the power level was fine.
Yeah.
And I think that going, like, when the discussion comes to power level as well, like, when we looked at Cassius's deck, I think it's fair to say, like, when we saw it, we're like, yeah, that's Cassius. And, like, to say, hey, you need, like, this power level and, like, this is too, this isn't right. Like, that's just asking Cassius not to be Cassius. And, like, I don't think, like, that would have been the same. Like, I was happy with it and I was fine with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the biggest problem with power level discussions in the format, to be frank, is that people are really whiny. Somebody's going to win the game at the end of the day. And to say Cassius's deck was like so far above the rest of our decks that we had no chance in that game is as if you did not watch the game. I'm literally one of my own mistakes giving the treasure to Cassius off the May ability for Rissik Seti, which I did not have to do. If I don't give him that treasure, he can't cast Flusterstorm. I win the counter war with Jimmy. Hole Breacher's dead. He doesn't get any of the treasure. He can't cast Omniscience on his turn. And we know exactly what cards he then has. Thassa's Oracle, Diabolic Intent. Yeah, those are good. He's going to go get the best card in his deck. He does not win on his next turn.
Yeah, and let's say that the Karavik was out and then came the Fiery
Emancipation.
Emancipation. Boom. That could have killed someone in that very next turn, right? Like, who knows? Because that's so much damage flying around. So there's a lot of things that could change with just one small alteration here or there.
Yeah, I thought my deck was pretty close to Cassius's. I think Cassius's was the strongest deck in the pod.
For sure.
But I don't care what pod you play in, one deck will be the strongest deck in that pod, right? It wasn't by a gap that was so large that none of the other decks had a chance to win. Because I thought I had the second strongest deck, but Jimmy had a moment in the game where you didn't notice it, but he was close to winning, right? So that's three decks already. And I think, again, yeah, like we said, Ashlyn's deck with just a little bit of help. Like, he just happened to get Narset out. What if he doesn't get Narset out early and she has five extra cards in that game? Who the heck knows what happens, right?
Yeah, so, true.
So I think it's crazy to say that these decks were not on a close enough power level to have a good game. You're not looking for decks that have an exact 25% chance across the board. It's impossible to set up, again, in the Pro Tour. These people are playing to win the tournament. Almost every single round, they'll go, oh, this deck has a 62% win chance against this other deck. That's the way the meta has lined up. You cannot build it so that it's always 50-50 at all times. That's just not the way that Magic works. You have to have a combination of good variance, good decision-making to win games, ultimately. But sometimes people are going to draw the right cards or whatever, and Cassius played very well.
Yeah.
So I think that these power levels were very, very good, actually. And anybody who looks at the game like this and says, oh, the power level was so far off that, you know, this is what I hate about Commander. Well, you're just not going to like very many Commander games you play in then, because most games are going to have a deck that wins that game, right? Instead of looking at that deck and saying, oh, they only won because they were so much more powerful.
Or they played this one card I hate so much, I can't believe they did.
Why don't you look in the mirror and say, man, if I hadn't given him that one treasure in that one moment, well, then maybe I win that game.
Yeah, I'll also like definitely ask people to look at real CEDH decks. Those have the ability to win on turn 2 and 3 sometimes.
They're usually tutoring too. He wasn't tutoring very much. Yes. He tutored only at the end, right?
Yeah. So again, I think it's a combination of just like the perception of the cards. Time Twister obviously is one that makes people go like, what the heck? But you know, this is Cassius. This is his brand. This is literally bling and like really high profile cards like that.
And I think also, like, if you rewatch the video and you watch all of us, like, we're having so much fun. Like, we really enjoyed, like, seeing Josh, like, somehow manage.
I don't know
managed
how much fun Josh had at one point, but
I was having a lot of fun right then, actually.
Until he almost had a heart attack.
I like telling people that I told them so.
Let's be honest. Yeah, that's great.
But, like, it's not like, yeah, there's some scary, like, having that, like, moment where it's like, oh my gosh, this could get really, really bad. Like, having the high stakes there, that, like, makes it so much more fun.
Yeah, that game had a lot of moments where your pulse was picked up as a player, right? That's one of the reasons you play Magic, is you just have those adrenaline moments. So, yeah. All right. Let's talk about something more fun.
Yeah, the animations, as always, so much love for the animations in the comments. Thanks to everyone that left a nice comment about that, especially the ones that talked about the ones you love the most. Obviously, Sam Waldo, he's been working on Game Nights now for quite a bit, along with Patrick Nan, who's helping him with the graphics. But we've got a bit of extra help this episode, too.
Yeah, we had some freelance help from Daniel Woodling and Jeffrey Palmer. There were actually some questions about the animations, which we wanted to answer. So a few people were asking about Rada in particular.
Yeah.
Rada is holding two swords in our animation. And if you know the card well, she's actually holding something else in her offhand in the actual card. She's holding a severed head.
Yeah. Do you know why that is? Why did we replace that head with a sword?
Yeah.
Well, listen, we feel like we have an obligation because we do know for sure that there are a lot of young fans that watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just very easy to replace and not have a severed head. So we did that.
Yeah, and they were like, are there going to be sound effects for the head? Is it going to like, is it going to shake, bob? Like,
it was just hard to figure out what to do with it. Also, you're right. Yeah, like, do we have it gushing blood or something? Like, yeah, we don't really want to do that.
We don't need
really
to get there.
Really
yeah.
fast.
Yeah. Go watch Game of Thrones if you want to see severed heads. Oh yes. So the toxic delusion is one of the most common things in the entire episode. There's just a tiny little at the end of that. Who decided that, Josh? What was the room like when that was the decision?
So Jake added the fart noise in the toxic deluge as like half jokingly, I think. And
yeah.
then he played it for us and we all laughed and we were like, oh, that's great. Let's just keep it.
Beautiful.
So Jake, as usual, just coming up with those, just those little things that really get the audience, give him a chuckle.
And it's toxic, right? You know, so yeah, farts, you know, all that.
Big bubbling swamp of bleh.
Yeah. I'd like to ask everyone, what was your favorite animation in the episode?
Joyra. Joyra's animation was beautiful.
Yep. I like that you said that because if you look at the card, we were like, okay, well, it's a commander, so we have to animate it. And we just stared at it and we're like, what the heck do we do with this? You know, because it's just like a person from here not apparently doing much. Like,
yeah, it's kind of chilling, looking.
It's a lot easier when they have a sword or they're doing something and you're like, well, we'll just have them swing
right.
that sword.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you liked it because it took us a little while to figure out what to do with it. But the idea of clocks and time really came into
effect. Yeah, and they just added that layer that made it feel really impactful too. I like that.
Right. It was just enough to give you like the imagination of like what could be, but like it was perfect. It was just mm-hmm. that like, oh yeah, that's Joyra.
How about you, Jimmy?
I really like Joyra as well. That was going to be my first choice. But because he said that, I'm going to go with the Teferi, Master of Time, with the and he's just stepping into it. There's something really satisfying about that effect, like a center frame thing that just has someone emerging. So I like that one quite a bit too. Also having to do with time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. We're right on theme with the episode.
Yep.
There is something satisfying about those circles that just sort of chunk into place.
Yeah.
Shoom, shoom.
It's like
just
a
feels
puzzle,
nice.
Right?
Yeah.
I want to play with it.
For me, it's really hard to pick a favorite. I really liked Narset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Narset, well, actually, we're going to go into this in a second here, but Narset, when she's speaking, if you notice, in fact, maybe I'll play a clip really quick here of Narset one more time. If she was in the montage, I don't even know if she was or not.
You have no power here.
So Narset, if you notice, like the mouth looked really good.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, Sam put in a lot of work to really make it look like that character was talking, and that was something I really thought turned out really well. When I saw her talk, I was like, holy crap, that looks like seamless.
Yeah,
yeah.
Rada,
really
too,
good.
Had a similar effect.
Yeah, so it's a thing that I know Sam and the VFX team has been working on because it's something we like to do, which is have the characters talk. They're called, in the video game industry, they're called barks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when a video game character just kind of has like a line that they say. And so the barks, they're written by Jordan Pridgen, first of all, who does all of our ads and stuff. And you've seen him on Extra Turns. He does a great job just coming up with really cool lines for them to say. And then what we've done is we started recording the voices of people in-house, but actually also recording their faces so that Sam can use that to make the mouths move correctly. So Hole Breacher was Manson. Rada was Lady Danger. Toralf, the He-Man Toralf. I have the power!
I love that.
That was Jake Boss. Jace, the mouth didn't actually move because we wanted it to feel like Jace was like speaking
in your head yeah,
telepathically.
Yeah, yeah.
That was Murph. Snapcaster Mage was me.
I like that.
Of course.
And then Narset was our own Ashlyn Rose.
As well as Chandra.
And Chandra.
Oh yeah, you were Chandra too. And Ashlyn actually, and maybe we'll show a shot of it here, because we had to figure out the angle that Narset was at, and the camera's kind of a little below her and to the left, and we had like Ashlyn like, okay, poke your chin up. And then say the line. And so now Ashlyn not only has to say the line and deliver it well, she also has to have the facial performance down pat. And don't move
and
your
not
head.
Move.
Yeah, don't move your head because we can't track it and everything.
But get the emotion right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the funny story about Narset, and we messed this up. It was my idea, but I just forgot to follow through on it.
Oh, no.
Because she gets played twice.
Uh-huh.
And she says, you have no power here. Ashlyn, can you do it for us?
You have no power here.
Nice. So I wanted the second time, because she dies and comes back, her to say, or she doesn't die, I chain of vapor, right, and she comes back. I wanted the second time her to go, you still have no power here.
right.
That'd be great.
Excuse me, yeah, you still have no power here.
Can you just read that for me, just so we can pretend?
You still have no power here.
Just a tiny bit of doubt.
That was amazing. Mad we didn't do it.
Roll it. We're going to re-edit the whole episode. Yeah, that was great. Okay, well, obviously tons of favorite animations, lots of favorite voice acting. About favorite moments. So what was your favorite moment in the game, the thing that you love the most? Josh, we'll start off with you.
Oh, hands down, it was the crazy stack. Even though it turned out badly for me and I lost it, I just love those, like, because we cut out a lot of it, obviously, for the episode, but there were so many times where we're all like, okay, hold on. What's on the stack right now?
Yeah.
What order are they in? Okay. And then we like look at our mana counter cards and we're like, all right, I'm going to do this. Okay, now what's on the stack?
Yeah. That's hilarious.
I love that complexity.
Yeah. Ashlyn, how about you?
I think, I have a favorite moment within the stack moment. I think during that whole thing, like, there were moments during that where we'd be like, oh yeah, this is during Josh's instep, isn't it?
Oh, like, yeah. It's like, yeah, you cast one thing and here we went.
Like, you just kept forgetting that, like, yeah, this is Josh's instep. And then my favorite moment of the game probably was, the whole point of building my Karavek deck, like, there's little parts in the deck that you get really excited for, and just the whole Torolf interaction and getting to have that happen, I was just really jazzed for, especially since it was a new set, and I was just really excited to see it go off. So just having the do-do-do-do-do with all the chaining of it.
Yeah. That was sweet. We talked about that possibility when we did the set review, but that's the first time I've actually seen Torolf just, like, chain lightning everything off the board.
Yeah.
It was sweet.
Okay, Cassius, let us know from wherever you are what your favorite moment was.
My favorite moment in the game was the moment I knew I would win. Very, very easy answer.
Very nice. I guess my favorite moment, it's more of a compilation of moments. I really got away with a lot this game in terms of, like, you know, typically I always find myself at like 15 life in game nights games or just commander games because I'm doing something or I'm just opening myself to get swung at or I'm paying life in some ridiculous way. I thought I actually had a really clean game. I was able to play a lot of cards with, use the ability of Rada a lot, which was the goal of the deck. I wanted to be able to use that 2 red mana, and getting Vedalken Orrery out really early also is always a good thing. So, you know,
that's cool. Tireless Tracker too, because the clues are so good with her, right? Yeah. That synergy was really cool.
That's like really the only real landfall in the deck too, I think. And of course, casting Jeska's Will almost 3 times. It's pretty cool.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the next category is regrets and misplays. So did you make any mistakes during the match that you think may have cost you the victory?
Yeah.
Jimmy, we just kind of alluded to it. If you're going to talk about what I think you're going to talk
about. Yeah, yeah. So the first time I cast Jeska's Will, I'm looking for a land off the top by flipping Apex Devastator and 2 other cards, Nyeth and then the Tireless Tracker. And I end up playing Vedalken Orrery and the Tireless Tracker. Now, on my board, I have 1 red-green untapped land, and I have a commander that can add 2 red if she attacks and add a green if I tap her. So I have 2 mana, but only 1 green available, so I can't do the Apex Devastator. But what I don't realize is that I have Balaghid Recovery in my hand, and I end up playing that as my land for the turn tapped because I was looking for a land. And so I'm like, crap, if I just cast Balaghid Recovery, I would have had tapped 1 green and then used 2 of the red from Jeska's Will. I could have gotten Jeska's Will back to my hand and recast it at that exact moment, flip 3 more cards off the top of my library. If I find an untapped green source there, I can 100% cast the Apex Devastator that turn right then and there. And I didn't do that.
I mean, there's an if, because you would have had to hit an untapped green source off of the second Jeska's Will cast. But getting an Apex Devastator into play that early in the game could have been, well, devastating.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been pretty crazy. But
that's a totally different game if you do that.
It changed the entire game.
Yeah, but later on in the game, I realized I could cast Jeska's Will twice, so I did it then.
Ashlyn, how about you? What are your biggest regrets or the misplay that you think might have cost
no
you?
No regrets, Ashlyn.
Nothing. I regret nothing. No, I probably would have played Karavek instead of Fiery Emancipation. Mm-hmm. I messed up my sequencing. I had the blood boil in me, and
yeah,
I was
me
just
too.
Like, all that damage, all that glorious damage, and I went with it. So
I think it's also like, were you scared that Karavek would get removed?
Oh, absolutely. That there's always the chance of that. Like, I was definitely 100% worried about that.
Right. Yeah, I think that is a worry when I'm playing a lot of times. That's like, if I cast my commander, maybe it just gets killed. So maybe I just do this other thing that has a more likelihood of surviving.
Yeah, enchantment removal versus creature removal. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's ask Cassius, even though he won, if he has any regrets or mistakes that he thinks he made.
I'd say yes. I think that I got too greedy when I tried to counter the Force of Vigor. Either way, he was trying to get rid of my Sylvan Library, and I got greedy. I should have just let it go, got my seven cards, and then just won the game nice and easy. So that was a big, big mistake, big misplay on my part.
Okay, and Josh, final one. You've mentioned it probably three times now.
Yep. It cost us the game. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry, Ashlyn. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
It's okay. We all kind of cost ourselves the game.
I guess I'm not sorry to Cassius, but I'm sorry to everyone out there for letting you down. If I just hadn't just knee-jerk reaction, given him the treasure off the Rhystic Study when it's a May ability and I don't have to give it to him,
right?
Then he doesn't Fluster Storm. I win that showdown. I'd get the Jessica's Will. I kill the whole Breacher. I'd brainstorm. He doesn't get any treasures. Totally different game because he can't cast Omniscience on his next turn. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm not guaranteeing that I win or anything, but he doesn't win on his next turn and we all get another turn and it could be a totally different game.
It would have been so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's down to only a couple of cards. So, and yes, he can tutor, but you know, it's a totally different ball game at that point. So yeah, I really did. I believe that's like one of the biggest mistakes I've probably ever made on game mm-hmm. nights. And you know what? A lot of people were saying like, in the moment, why didn't you take it back? And I'm like, I've been on record on the show before that like I don't like taking things like that back. And also like that's not the type of game that it was in. Like right. that was sort of a no holds barred game, and I was like, nope, I made that mistake and I'm gonna have to live with it.
Yeah, it's interesting when the no holds barred thing ends up happening. I think all of us kind of overcommitted a little bit at some point.
Yeah.
We're all just like, well, we're going in 110%, and Cassius is the one's like, I've been in the NFL. I know how to maintain my energy level at this high competitive state. And we're all just like tired after one lap because we sprinted the whole darn time.
I just imagine we have like these speakers in the background playing, and you just hear like the past the point of no return.
True. And you thought there'd be no singing on this episode.
True.
All right. Ashlyn, any parting thoughts before we go here? Do you want to plug any of your socials? You do a lot of stuff. It seems like you're always on a D&D stream or a Commander stream or something these days. Obviously, we're going to put all of Ashlyn's details as far as her Twitter or Instagram, her Twitch channel in the show notes. If you want to find Ashlyn and watch her destroy people in various games, then go ahead and follow the show notes. But is there anything else you wanted to say?
I mean, I always have fun on these things, so I really appreciate everyone's support, and I love that you enjoy watching and enjoy the decks I build. They're so much fun, and I will continue to build fun, challenging builds. And just at the end of the day, remember, like, power level, like, again, we all have a lot of fun, and that we are all in this together when we decide these things, and just keep that in mind when you go into the comments and everything.
And we signed up for this.
Yeah, exactly. We made a choice. We made an active choice in this.
We did, yeah. You can find Ashlyn on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. We'll have all the links, of course, on screen as well as below.
And if you want to check out my voiceover demos, you can go to ashlynrose.com to hear them. So, yeah, and exciting. I have some fun animations coming out soon later this year.
Oh, I can't wait to see them then.
Or just watch that Narset animation over and over and over and over again.
I still don't. Okay.
All right. And Cassius, of course, all of his information will also be in the show notes. His Twitter, his Instagram. And he started a card shop. He owns a card shop now. And it's called Cash Cards Unlimited. We're going to show some footage from it here on screen if you're watching on YouTube. There's also a Twitter and an Instagram for his card shop. But also the card shop's really cool. I visited it.
Oh, you did? You went?
Yeah. It's like a high-end like vape shop or something is what it feels like on the inside. But it's Cassius, so like it has the foiliest foil versions of like all the cards.
Nice.
I'm like, yeah, you walk in there like, oh, I want everything in that case. And not because it's like super, it's not Moxes and stuff, but
right,
it's like
right.
the shiny versions, showcase versions of like everything.
All
like,
that, yeah.
Yeah. I've only seen that stuff like online. Because you have to open 500 packs to get one of those. You
right,
know?
Right.
Which is what he does, I suppose.
Pretty cool. Yeah, check it out. And you guys can all see that online as well. And as always, big praise to the editors who spend so many hours making this happen. We have Jake Boss, as always, Josh Murphy, and a new person got to edit this one, right?
Manson. He's been on the team for one other episode. So Manson is a full-on editor on the show now. He's doing a really good job for us. So
go Manson.
Good job to the editing team. They work so hard to get these episodes out to you. So glad you enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's the end of the episode, but not yet, because you got to know, cardkingdom.com/commandzone is the place that you should go if you're not heading to Cash Cards Unlimited. That's our affiliate link. That's how you support our show. And also, you can get some of the crazy cards that we played in this episode. You can build your own brand new deck. You have new sets coming out. Strixhaven is right on the way, and I'm really, really excited to see what they do with the two color pairings there. So go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone to buy any and all Magic products you need to get ready for your next game night.
And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You get all kinds of cool perks. If you're a patron at any level, you get to watch extra turns and game nights earlier than the general public.
Yeah.
You actually, the patrons help us a lot of times sort of find small mistakes and things that we sometimes have time to fix before the whole world sees it, which is really, really helpful. They're kind of like our test audience. Yeah. They also get to talk to us about all the games on Discord. Jimmy and I are on Discord all the time. Ashlyn's in there a lot. Mm-hmm. Our whole team is on the Discord. So if you got questions for the team or you want to ask Jimmy and I a question, patreon.com/commandzone. Just join up and you'll be part of our community.
See you there.
All right, everybody. Ashlyn, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And big thanks to Cassius for sending in his clips. And thanks for watching, everybody out there.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.